हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 83, chapter 89, canto 10. Suta Goswami said, thus did this fragrant nectar flow from the lotus mouth of Sukadeva Goswami, the son of the sage Vyasadeva. This wonderful glorification of the Supreme Person destroys all fear of material existence. A traveler who constantly drinks this nectar through his ear holes will forget the fatigue brought on by wandering along the paths of worldly life. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, being highly satisfied with the teachings of his guru, which take away great doubts of even those who know scriptures, Sutta praises this knowledge, right? Because many know scriptures, but still doubts come up if they don't know the conclusions, right? As we saw before, the six schools of philosophy, then they know the scriptures, but not knowing the conclusions, then what Sukadeva Goswami speaks can clear even their doubts. Right? Sutta praises this knowledge. Right? It means this, you know, the conclusions of Krishna consciousness. By this, he creates great faith in others. This topic, which we're just spoken about, the supremacy of Vishnu over Shiva, full of prema, is like fragrant nectar from the lotus mouth of the son of Vyas. He mentions both Vyas and Sukadeva out of intense bhakti. By its nature, it is the highest goal for humanity. As well, the topic destroys fear of old age and death. Because one's afraid of old age and death because then one doesn't get to control and enjoy as one would like to. Right? So that's the fear. But the point is you just are serving Krishna. You're absorbed in Krishna. So then there's not a problem. Right? Travelers in samsara develop many ears to drink this nectar and give up the fatigue of wandering on the road, forgetting all ancient sufferings by the bliss of this knowledge. Right? Because these sufferings go back since time immemorial. It's not something new. Mm-hmm. Whatever suffering you have now, it's not a new category. It's just a variation on the same old categories, right? Okay, so they forget all ancient sufferings by the bliss of this knowledge. They then give up wandering, right? So they stop samsara. Verses 21 to 65. Krishna Arjuna rescued the deceased sons of a brahmana. Sukadeva Goswami said, once in Dwarka, a brahmana's wife gave birth to a son, but the newborn infant died as soon as he touched the ground. O Bharata, the brahmana took the corpse and placed it at the door of King Ugrasena's court. Then, agitated and lamenting miserably, he spoke the following. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, in the Bhagavad Gita is confirmed by the Lord that there is no truth superior to Krishna. Sukadeva Goswami also, in order to draw attention to the fact that among all Vishnu Tattva forms, Lord Krishna is 100% the Supreme Personality of Godhead, narrated the story of an incident that took place when Lord Krishna was present. Right? So the other two are establishing Vishnu over Brahma and Shiva. But now he's establishing Krishna as the supreme form of Vishnu. Right? Yeah. The Brahmana said, this duplicitous, greedy enemy of Brahmins, this unqualified ruler addicted to sense pleasure, has caused my son's death by some discrepancies in the execution of his duties. Citizens serving such a wicked king, who takes pleasure in violence and cannot control his senses, are doomed to suffer poverty and constant misery. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book. Formerly, when there were responsible kings up to the time of Dwapara Yuga, when Lord Krishna was present, the king was liable to be blamed for the untimely death of a child in the presence of his parents. Similarly, such responsibility was there during the time of Lord Ramachandra. As we have explained in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the king was so responsible for the comforts of the citizens, Praja, that he was to see that there was not even excessive heat or cold. Right? Because if you're performing your duties properly and you're seeing that everybody else is, there's nothing going on improper in the kingdom, then everything will be proper. There even won't be excessive heat or cold. Right? Now the Brahmana, whose child had died, thinking that there was no fault on his own part, immediately went to the palace door with the dead child in his arms and accused the king as follows. The present king, Ugrasena, is envious of the Brahmins. The exact word used in this connection is Brahma Dvishaha, one who is envious of the Vedas. Of a qualified Brahmin or of the Brahmana caste is called Brahma Dvish. So the king was accused of being Brahma Dvish. He was also accused of being Shatadhi, falsely intelligent. The executive head of state must be very intelligent to see to the comforts of the citizens. But according to the Brahmana, the king was not at all intelligent, although he was occupying the royal throne. Therefore, you know, you could say there's some intelligence to be on the top of that, the political pile, but it's still not the actual intelligence that's going to have a good effect. Therefore, the Brahmin also called him Lubdha, which means greedy. In other words, a king or an executive head of state should not occupy the exalted post of president or king if he is greedy and self-interested. But it is natural that an executive head becomes self-interested when he's attached to material enjoyment. Therefore, another word used here is vishayatmanaha, means one who is attached to sense enjoyment. Because if you're attached, then you're not going to be interested in these things and that like that. So that means the administration means they're sense controlled. Like that. The idea, okay, I'm on the top of the pile, now I can do whatever I want. No, that doesn't exist. It's the ones on the bottom of the pile, they do whatever they want. But it doesn't mean you get any good facility for it. Right?
So Maharaj, can we say that for the vidya, it's very important not to be attached to material enjoyment?
Yes. Because they cannot do their own. That's the whole point. Common person means they're just naturally attached. Being in the material world means you're attached, but the idea is that the dvija should be attempting to control that, to properly engage and perform duties in connection with that. That's what they're trying to do. And then the common person may or may not. If they do, great, and if they don't, they don't lose their position.
Yes.
Right? Yes. So it says, yeah. The Brahmana also accused the king of being Kshatrabandhu. Bandhu, which refers to a person born in a family of Kshatriyas, or the royal order, but lacking the qualifications of a royal personality. A king should protect Brahminical culture, and should be very alert to the welfare of his citizens. He should not be greedy due to attachment to material enjoyment. If a person with no qualification represents himself as a Kshatriya of the royal order, he is not called a Kshatriya, but a Kshatrabandhu. Similarly, if a person is born of a Brahmana father but has no Brahminical qualification, he's called a Brahma Bandhu or a Dvija Bandhu. This means that a Brahmana or a Kshatriya is not accepted simply by birth. One has to qualify himself for the particular position. Only then is he accepted as a Brahmana or a Kshatriya. Right? Because they have to have those qualities above that. Like that. Even Vaishyas, you'll say like that, that, you know, you have that there's no interest, inclination. There's no inclination in business or ways of making money, and no good character, then you would consider them Brahma Bandhu, right? But otherwise, they have good character, but not necessarily so good at business, then, you know, they do practical activities like that. But you'll see the most strongest positions of the Dvija Bandhu will be with Brahmins and Kshatriyas. Because it's based on qualities, that's what they have to have. Otherwise, they can't function. Thus, the Brahmana charged that his newly born baby was dead due to the disqualifications of the king. The Brahmana took it to be most unnatural, and therefore he held the king responsible. Right? If it's a natural thing, he can't complain. He drops his cup or something and his tea, you know, gets all over the floor. He can't blame the king. But the point is, his children don't die in the presence of their parents. That's unnatural. Right? So then he's taking it that it must be the king's fault. We also find in Vedic history that if a Kshatriya king was irresponsible, sometimes a consulting board of brahmanas maintained by the monarchy would dethrone him. But no,
Why wouldn't this Brahman consider his own karma from previous lives?
That may be, but the point is why would it manifest in this kingdom? Mm-hmm. You know, it might manifest in another kingdom, but why would it manifest in this kingdom? As Vaishnavas, that's how we would look. But I'm just saying, it's just if you're looking at administration, this is the level of responsibility. You sometimes think, oh, we did this basic thing, we're done. No, it's down to this is how far it goes. Right? Okay. An example of this is King Venus, described in the 14th chapter of the 4th canto. Considering all these points, it appears that the post of monarch in the Vedic civilization is a very responsible one, right? So it's not like, because they'll say, oh, kings, but, you know, this and that, and they're just power, and what about the people, and all that kind of jazz. But here is they're very responsible, which when you have governments that are of the people, by the people, for the people, then is it really?
By the people.
Yeah, so that's the whole point. But here is you're seeing that it's that responsible. So it doesn't matter. Governance is supposed to be like this. So whether it's done by the people, whether it's done by the monarchy, whether it's an oligarchy, whatever it is, it should protect the people. Right? In modern politics, the post of monarch has been abolished, and the president is not held responsible for the comforts of the citizens. Right? In this age of Kali, the executive head of state somehow or other gets votes and is elected to an exalted post. But the condition of the citizens continues to be full of anxiety, distress, unhappiness, and dissatisfaction. But it should be you put in a proper head of state and things should adjust. But if things stay just the way they are, what does it matter? It could have been this one, it could have been that one, it could have been any of them. Right? Sukadeva Goswami said, the wise Brahmana suffered the same tragedy with his second and third child. Each time he left the body of his dead son at the king's door and sang the same song of lamentation. When the ninth child died, Arjuna, who was near Lord Keshava, happened to overhear the Brahmana lamenting. Thus Arjuna addressed the Brahmana. What is the matter, my dear Brahmana? Isn't there some lowly member of the royal order here who can at least stand before your house with a bow in his hand? So when he says lowly member, doesn't mean that just, you know, a common kshatriya. He means lowly, means the kshatriyas as a class are lowly compared to the Brahmana.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. These kshatriyas are behaving as if they were Brahmanas, idly engaged in fire sacrifices. Right? So the kshatriya does his brahminical stuff in the morning, does his yajnas, does all these different things, but if that's all he does,
yes,
then that's improper. The rulers of a kingdom in which Brahmanas lament over lost wealth, wives, and children are merely impostors playing the role of kings just to earn their livelihood. My lord, right, because the Kshatriya does his work not to earn a livelihood. It just comes on its own. Just like Brahmanas don't do their things to earn a livelihood. Right? It just comes. My lord, I will protect the progeny of you and your wife, who are in such distress, and if I fail to keep this promise, I will enter fire to atone for my sin. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, when the Brahmana came to accuse the king of Dwarka for the ninth time, Arjuna happened to be present with Krishna. On hearing that a Brahmana was accusing the king of not properly protecting him, Arjuna became inquisitive and approached the Brahmana. He said, my dear Brahmana, why do you say that there is no proper kshatriyas to protect the citizens of your country? Is there not even someone who can pretend to be a kshatriya? Who can carry a bow and arrow at least to make a show of protection? Like, at least they should do that. Do you think that all the royal personalities in this country simply engage in performing sacrifices with the Brahmins but have no chivalrous power? Thus, Arjuna indicated that Kshatriyas should not sit back comfortably on the pretext of performing Vedic rituals, but must rather be chivalrous in protecting the citizens. Right? They always have to be dynamic. That's the whole point. Not that they just sit back and enjoy themselves. Right? Brahmanas, being engaged in spiritual activities, are not expected to do anything which requires physical endeavor. Therefore, they need to be protected by the Kshatriyas, so they will not be disturbed in the execution of their higher occupational duties. Yeah. Okay. So there you get the Brahmanas, being engaged in spiritual activities, are not expected to do anything which requires physical endeavor.
Yes.
Right? So that means going beyond the effort, the physical effort to do the spiritual activities. Right? Means for administrative, you know, political, economic, sensual, these things, they make no endeavor.
Yes.
Right? So that means, that's the meaning of requiring physical endeavor.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That makes sense? Yes. Not this, you don't even lift a finger, right? Therefore, they need to be protected by the Kshatriyas so they will not be disturbed in the execution of their higher occupational duties. So they're executing their duties. But the idea is at least, you know, sometime people should focus on spiritual things, but they still have to perform their duties, right? If the Brahmanas feel unwanted separation from their wives and children, Arjuna continued, and the Kshatriya kings do not take care of them, the Kshatriyas are to be considered no more than stage players. In dramatic performances in the theater, an actor may play the part of a king, but no one expects any benefits from such a make-believe king. Right? It's not that the country will be running better because he did such a great performance. Right? Similarly, if the king or the executive head of a state cannot give protection to the head of the social structure, he is considered merely a bluffer. Such executive heads simply live for their own livelihood while occupying exalted posts as chiefs of state. My lord, I promise that I shall give protection to your children, and if I am able to do so, then I shall enter into blazing fire so that the sinful contamination which has infected me will be counteracted. The Brahmana said, neither Sankarsana, Vasudev, Prajumna, the best of bowmen, nor the unequaled warrior Aniruddha could save my sons. Then why do you naively attempt a feat that the almighty lords of the universe could not perform? We cannot take you seriously. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, the Brahmana directly hinted that Arjuna could not do that which was impossible for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He felt that Arjuna was promising something beyond his power. The Brahmana said, I consider your promise to be like that of an inexperienced child. I cannot put my faith in your promise. Right? So, you know, nice mood, he's getting up there and this, but the point is if the Chaturvyuha is not protecting his child, then how can Arjuna, right? Arjuna said, I am neither Lord Shankarshan, O Brahmana, nor Lord Krishna, nor even Krishna's son. Rather, I am Arjuna, wielder of the Gandiva bow. Do not minimize my ability, which was good enough to satisfy Lord Shiva. O Brahmana, I will bring back your sons, dear master, even if I have to defeat death himself in the battle. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, he had satisfied Shiva, who was disguised as a tribal, pleasing him by his equal strength. The details are given in Mahabharata. To consult, right? So in other words, the essential point is that you just know what's there. And then the details are already in Mahabharata, so. Yeah. To console the Brahmana, he makes a promise, decisively defeating Vijitya, death himself on the battlefield. I will bring back all the children, not just one son. This is a statement of pride, since he was feeling miserable, with some anger at his friend Krishna, famous as the protector of Brahmanas, but who had ignored the Brahmana. Krishna showed indifference to the Brahmana in order to increase the longing of Mahavishnu, as expressed later. Right? Because if he shows some interest, then Mahavishnu will think, okay, now I've got their attention. But Krishna is just like, you know, completely indifferent. Yeah. So Mahavishnu will be thinking,
like for 9 years.
Hmm?
And the longing is for 9 years.
Yes. Then, you know, yeah. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Arjuna then understood that the Brahman had lost all faith in the Kshatriya kings. Therefore, to encourage him, Arjuna spoke as if criticizing even his friend, Lord Krishna. While Lord Krishna and others were listening, he specifically attacked Krishna by saying, "My dear Brahmana, I am neither Sankarsana, nor Krishna, nor any of one of Krishna's sons like Prajumna or Aniruddha. My name is Arjuna," right? So Sankarsan, you know, Krishna's Vasudeva, and then Prajumna Aniruddha are his sons, right? So that's the Chaturvyuha, right? Because they're all in Dwarka, and so they didn't protect. Right, because you're thinking, well, you know, if he's turning to God, then, you know, like before, well, it's just karma, why is he complaining? Because they're the kings in Dwarka, and he's the Brahmin there, and they didn't protect. You know, so they didn't protect. Ugrasena then, by this, is he's not doing, you know, what makes it work. So now he has no faith in the Kshatriyas. "My name is Arjuna, and I carry the bow known as Gandiva. You cannot insult me, for I have satisfied even Lord Shiva by my prowess when we were both hunting in the forest. I had a fight with Lord Shiva, who appeared before me as a hunter, and when I satisfied him by my prowess, he gave me the weapon known as Pashupata. Do not doubt my chivalry." Right? So Prabhupada so nicely works in what it is that we may not know, but keeping that mood. So that's why Krishna book is so nice, because he doesn't lose the mood when he explains things. Right? It's not like story and then going out and story and going out. He just works it all into the story. Right? "Do not doubt my chivalry. I shall bring back your sons, even if I have to fight with death personified." When the Brahmana was assured by Arjuna in such exalted words, he was somehow or another convinced, and thus he returned home. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "Thus convinced by Arjuna, O tormentor of enemies, the Brahman went home, satisfied by having heard Arjuna's declaration of his prowess. When the wife of the elevated Brahman was again about to give birth, he went to Arjuna in great anxiety and begged him, 'Please, please protect my child from death.' After touching pure water, offering obeisances to Lord Maheshwara, and recollecting the mantras for his celestial weapons, Arjuna strung his bow, Gandiva." Right? So they'll go through the mantras, because they're invoked by mantras. So if you don't remember the mantra, the weapon doesn't work. So you'll have to go through, remember everything's there, so he's ready. Right? Arjuna strung his Gandiva bow. Arjuna fenced in the house where the birth was taking place by shooting arrows attached to various missiles. Thus, the son of Prita constructed a protective cave of arrows covering the house upwards, downwards, and sideways. The Brahmana's wife then gave birth, but after the newborn infant had been crying for a short time, he suddenly vanished into the sky in his selfsame body. Right, because before then they died, so then you figure they fail. But here, because otherwise then you won't know what the cause. Yes. So this time Mahavishnu just takes the child. So now they'll go looking, because otherwise if the child dies, then they'll think, okay, well, what's the reason? Look, but if he goes, then he'll go looking, right? The Brahmana then derided Arjuna in front of Lord Krishna. "Just see how foolish I was to put my faith in the bragging of a eunuch. When neither Prajumna, Adiruddha, Rama, or Keshava can save a person, who else can possibly protect him? To hell with that liar, Arjuna. To hell with that braggart's bow." Right? Because he says, "I'm the wielder of Gandiva. You can't say this about me. He is so foolish that he has deluded himself into thinking he can bring back a person whom destiny has taken away." Yes.
As we see in this episode, Brahman, he knows perfect philosophy, and still he is like very emotional at the moment. So how those two coexist?
Because we're people, right? So it's not that it's not the what's it? I don't even remember the name, but. Something like C2K2 or something? Or? No? Doesn't ring a bell? It's not that we turn into robots.
R2D2,
yes. So we don't turn into robots because we, you know, are good at devotional service. But, does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that still that personal element is there. That's how all these things come up. And so it's some arrangement by the Lord and by Mahavishnu. Otherwise, if he wasn't disturbed like this, why would Krishna and Arjuna come to see him? Right? You know, so many people are dying, no one's coming to see Mahavishnu.
Yes.
So it has to be arranged in some way that it's going to create some drama, so that then, okay, then they'll do something. Because especially Kshatriyas, then, you know, drama, they get very inspired. Srila Sanatana Goswami elaborates. He curses Arjuna's attempts since they were unsuccessful. Arjuna made false statements because he could not protect the child. Arjuna, boasting, foolishly thought he could bring back a person who was killed by Prarabdha Karma or the will of the Lord. Not only was he foolish, but had bad intelligence since he claimed he was better than Balaram and Krishna. Right, he was just trying to invoke this faith in the Brahmins, but still the method using is saying he's better than them. Right? But we see here is that by the will of the Lord, so we know at this point they don't know, but it's the will of Mahavishnu. So, mm-hmm. And now, Krishna knows, but
now here Arjuna, he was first taking shelter of Lord Shiva, not of Krishna.
He's always taking shelter of him, but he's gotten his weapon from Lord Shiva and all that. He got so many, so then taking his, because he's going to, you know, destroy something, so.
Yes, but it's mean it's, he took, something about Lord Shiva, no, he offered obeisances to Lord Maheshwara, not to Krishna in the beginning.
Krishna and her friends. He's already surrendered to Krishna. He knows everything is by Krishna's grace. But you're mechanically doing something, then where these things come from, you take shelter there. You offer your respects.
Yes.
No, it's just like, let's say we want to get something done, so then we may be respectful to, let's say, the minister. We know it's by Krishna's grace, but still you have to deal properly.
Yes.
And when you're there with Krishna, and Krishna, you are going out and doing things as if you're not the Supreme Lord, then you have to deal with.
Yes, yes.
Right? So we may not, we'll just take shelter of Krishna. But the point is otherwise, how does Krishna's pastimes work?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's part of that. So there's not a problem in respecting Lord Shiva. It's just that we have to understand he's not the supreme.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there may be that prowess coming through him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Arjuna, who apparently had not left Dwarka because he had to fulfill his promise to the Brahmana, was called at night when the Brahmana's wife was to give birth to the child, right? So he would have remained for that next year or something. While going to the maternity home to attend to the delivery case of the Brahmana's wife, Arjuna remembered Lord Shiva and not his friend Krishna. He thought that since Krishna could not give protection to the Brahmana, it was better to take shelter of Lord Shiva. This is another instance of how a person takes shelter of the demigods. This is explained in the Bhagavad Gita. A person who loses his intelligence because of greed and lust forgets the Supreme Personality of Godhead and takes shelter of the demigods. Of course, Arjuna was not an ordinary living entity. But because of his friendly dealings with Krishna, he thought that Krishna was unable to give protection to the Brahmana and that he would do better to remember Lord Shiva. Later it was proved that Arjuna's taking shelter of Lord Shiva instead of Krishna was not at all successful. Arjuna, however, did his best by chanting different mantras, and he shot arrows up and down to guard the maternity home from all directions. The Brahmana's wife delivered a male child, and as usual, the child began to cry. But suddenly, within a few minutes, both the child and Arjuna's arrows disappeared into the sky. So he had made this whole thing, but everything disappeared. Right, so in other words, it's still again proving, remember we're proving the supremacy of Vishnu over the demigods. So again in this story that aspect comes up. Right? So even though he did take shelter for because he's friends with Krishna and all that, still it doesn't work out.
Yes.
Can we say that we have to always see the frame of reference everything is said, written, or done.
Yes.
And sometimes people, they cannot understand what's going on with them because they cannot see the whole picture.
Yes.
They don't understand the reference.
Yes.
So is it always better to ask those who are more senior, more close?
If you can't figure it out, then you try that. But as one letter Srila Prabhupada mentions, that if you can't tell, and actually it's in the purport, if you can't tell what is the, it doesn't appear to be any reason or cause for anything, it ultimately goes back to Krishna, so you just take shelter of Krishna. Right? Because we're looking for something to correct. But when we can't find any reason why it should be like that, we just surrender to Krishna. Because he's the ultimate cause of all causes. So the idea is you're going past this aspect of the devata. So we see here Arjuna, because of his friendliness with Krishna, then took shelter of Lord Shiva. But as we see, it doesn't work out. Right? So all of his potency and power and everything, you know, so it's not that the baby just disappeared, everything disappeared. Because there, you know, Arjuna's protecting, so that goes, and then the baby can go. It's not that he, Mahavishnu, then has to defeat, you know, Arjuna's, you know, weaponry, and somehow they get the baby in between the arrows or something like that. He just removes all the arrows also.
Just in case.
Yeah, you know, just
on conversation with Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he said that if you can't find the cause, then the cause is Krishna Sarva Karana Karana Nikoti.
Okay. It appears that the Brahmin's house was near Krishna's residence, and Lord Krishna was enjoying everything that was taking place, apparently in defiance of his authority, right? Because then Arjuna is doing it on his own. He criticized Krishna. He was all there in front of Krishna. He didn't, they didn't discuss it. He's not like, we don't hear about that, you know, it was one of those things that, because they would discuss all kinds of things. And he took shelter of Lord Shiva. You know, so, you know, like that. So Krishna's enjoying the whole pastime right here. It was he who played the trick of taking away the Brahmin's baby, as well as the arrows, including the one given by Lord Shiva. So he just took everything, right? He took shelter of Shiva because he gave you the Pashupata. He even took that arrow. Of which Arjuna was so proud, right? Because he was proud of that. I'm Arjuna and this and that and so on. Yeah. Antavat tu phalam tesham tad bhavat yalpa me desham. Less intelligent men take shelter of the demigods due to bewilderment and are satisfied with the temporary benefits they award, right? Then the benefit goes away and then they're lamenting again. In the presence of Lord Krishna and others, the Brahmana began to accuse Arjuna, right? Because before he was accusing the others and he wasn't involved. And, hey, okay, yeah, leave them. I'm Arjuna. So now he's getting it, right? In the presence of Krishna and the others, right? So he had made comments about Krishna and now he gets it back. Everyone see my foolishness. I put my faith in the words of Arjuna, who is impotent and who is expert only in false promises. How foolish I was to believe Arjuna. He promised to protect my child even when Prajumna, Aniruddha, Lord Balaram, and Lord Krishna had failed. If such great personalities could not protect my child, then who can do so? I therefore condemn Arjuna for his false promise, and I also condemn his celebrated beau Gandiva, and his impudence in declaring himself greater than Lord Balaram, Lord Krishna, Prajumna, and Aniruddha. How can anyone save my child, who has already been transferred to another planet? Due to sheer foolishness only, Arjuna thought he could bring back my child from another planet. Sukadeva Goswami continued, while the wise Brahmana continued to heap insults upon him, Arjuna employed a mystic incantation to go at once to Samyamani, the city of heaven where Lord Yamaraj resides. Not seeing the Brahma's child there, Arjuna went to the cities of Agni, Niriti, Soma, Vayu, and Varuna. Because right, they all have their cities all around the local mountains. Right? With weapons at ready, he searched through all the domains of the universe, from the bottom of the subterranean region to the roof of heaven. Finally, not having found the Brahmana's son anywhere, Arjuna decided to enter the sacred fire, having failed to keep his promise, right? Because before that, okay, the child disappeared, but he'll go find it, right, and bring him back. Because he had said before, even if I have to fight with Yamaraj. So until he's done all that, then only you can say, and it didn't work, then you can say it failed.
Yes.
But just that it didn't work right then, you know, he has more tricks up his sleeve, right? But as he was about to do so, Lord Krishna stopped him and spoke the following words. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, by his mystic powers he went to Yamaraj, but did not see the child. He then went north to Somapuri. He went to Varunapuri and Vayavapuri. He first went to Dwarka to ask Krishna, who could see everything in all places. Then Krishna said, I have not seen the child. You must search for him. He then went to these places searching. He did not go to the northeast direction of Shiva, since Shiva was his guru. It would be impossible for his guru to take the child. He even went to Brahmaloka with weapons in hand. Not having obtained the child for certain, he wanted to enter fire. Krishna spoke to him and made him give up the idea of dying. Lord Krishna said, I will show you the Brahmana's sons, so please don't despise yourself like this. These same men who now criticize us will soon establish our spotless fame. Having thus advised, because Arjuna was worried, well, you know, protecting the Brahmins, protecting the, you know, the position of the Kshatriyas, you know, like that, and his own name. Thus, having advised Arjuna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, had Arjuna join him on his divine chariot, and together they set off towards the west, right? Because he first started in his own chariot, went around the universe. So now he gets on the divine chariot. And together they set off towards the west. The Lord's chariot passed over the seven islands of the middle universe, each with its ocean and its seven principal mountains. Then it crossed the Loka-Loka boundary and entered the vast region of total darkness. In that darkness, the chariot's horses, Shaibya, Sugriva, Megapushpa, and Balahaka. Oh. Is that where the name comes from? Lost their way, seeing them in this condition. Seeing them in this condition, O best of the Bharatas, Lord Krishna, the supreme master of all masters of yoga, sent his Sudarshan disc before the chariot. That disc shone like thousands of suns. The Lord Sudarshan disc penetrated the darkness with its blazing effulgence. Racing forward with the speed of the mind, it cut through the fearsome, dense oblivion expanded from primeval matter, as an arrow shot from Lord Rama's bow cuts through the enemy's army. Following the Sudarshan disc, the chariot went beyond the darkness and reached the endless spiritual light of all the pervasive Brahma Jyoti. Right? Because if you're going through the layers, it means they've gone through the universe, through the coverings. So the outside one, a Pradhan, that's the biggest. Right? So then they crossed all the other ones, no problem. When they got to that, being the biggest and the darkest, like then so then he sends a Sudarshan. As Arjuna beheld this glaring effulgence, his eyes hurt, and so he shut them. From that region they entered a body of water resplendent with huge waves being churned by a mighty wind. Within that ocean, Arjuna saw an amazing palace, more radiant than anything he had ever seen before. Its beauty was enhanced by thousands of ornamental pillars bedecked with brilliant gems. Yeah, before pillars were good because they, what do you call it? They were ornamented. Nowadays, they try to get rid of all the pillars. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, by following the path of the chakra, they crossed Prakriti, by piercing the seven layers of matter. Arjuna then saw the light of the Lord, Parabrahman, famous in the Vedanta, by his eyes endowed with Chit Shakti. Its supreme position is described with the word infinite, because it was spread everywhere at all times. Right, so infinite is also including time, not just space. By following the... Arjuna entered the Viraja River. Padma Purana says, Pradana Parama Vyomor, Vyomnor, Antare Viraja Nadi. Between the material and spiritual worlds lies the Viraja River. It had huge waves because of the wind. In the water there was an astonishing palace, surpassing everything in all the worlds. Vai means famous. It shone even more than the Brahma Jyoti, since it was adorned with 1,000 pillars made of gems, which shone by their own power. This indicates also the great size of the palace. Mrityushjaya Tantra describes this palace. This is Jiva Goswami. Above the universe is the great abode of Brahma. Above that is the abode of the son of Vikunta. And above that, those of Shiva's forms in the layer of Ahankara of the universal shell. Above that is the abode of Mahavishnu, situated in the Mahatattva layer. And above that, the abode of Durga in the Prakriti layer. Above that is time, which brings fear to all, along with time past and future, full of bliss. Then comes the ever-fresh, excellent ocean of nectar, Viraja. On its bank stays Mahakala, Mahavishnu, controller of all. In the water on the north side is the auspicious jeweled islands. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. Lord Krishna Arjuna entered a vast spiritual water. The spiritual water is called the Karana Ocean, which means that this ocean is the origin of the creation of the material world. This place is also known as Viraja, because it is free from the influence of the three qualities of the material world. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's the Karana Ocean, it's also the Viraja River. Mm-hmm. Right? Yes.
So they went to visit Karanda Kashaya Vishnu, not Chirada Kashaya Vishnu?
No, Karanda. They went outside the universe, because that's what he said. They went through, because when you cross Loka Loka, then you go into that kind of darkness there. Then they went through the layers, where it's totally dark. Then they needed Sudarshan. So through all the layers, everything that's there. So even though those are controlled by the different demigods, it's still within the universe. Then when you go beyond that, then you get to Viraja. Mm. Like, because when it mentions that this is for this person, that person, all that, that's all still within the coverings. Because there is a whole scene going on in those coverings. Like that. So it's like, you know, the 14 worlds, that's going on here. Now, how that works, it must be an extension of the Satyaloka or something. But it's still, you know, there's all kinds of things happening there. You know, we saw when Gopakumar went through, and he saw, you know, all these different cities and everything like that. And he got to the last covering, then Pradhan, then Mohini Devi was worshipping, no, Maya Devi was worshipping Mohini Devi. So that's hers, because it says the last one's her realm. Like that. And so it's by worshipping Mohini, then she has the power to put everybody in illusion. Like that.
So, who is the son of Vikunta? Abha Brahma's
Abha? Not sure.
And Mahavishnu is coming two times, like, in this below Durga is Mahavishnu.
But didn't we just explain that? Did we explain that?
Yeah.
It means you have to make the connections. So if you want these really mechanical kind of things, then you're not going to get them here. Sometimes they may come up if it's a new area, but we're having to reference there is that already we've covered this. So all these layers, they have deities. So those deities have their situation. So that's within the universe, but in the coverings. Then beyond that, then you have the Viraja. So when it's just, generally when we see it next to the universe, we'll consider it as Viraja. But we're talking about the whole thing. And that, you know, that's the cause, that's the Karana Ocean. But they're the same. This place is also known as Viraja because it is free from the influence of the three qualities of the material world. Sukadeva Goswami continued. In that palace was the huge, awe-inspiring serpent Anantasesh. He shone brilliantly with a radiance emanating from the gems on his thousands of hoods and reflected from twice as many fearsome eyes. He resembled white Mount Kailash, and his necks and tongues were dark blue. Arjuna then saw the omnipresent and omnipotent Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mahavishnu, sitting at ease on the serpent bed. His bluish complexion was the color of a dense rain cloud. He wore a beautiful yellow garment. His face looked charming. His broad eyes were most attractive, and he had 8 long, handsome arms. His profuse locks of hair were bathed on all sides in the brilliance reflected from the clusters of precious jewels decorating his crown and earrings. He wore the Kustuba gem, the mark of Srivatsa, and a garland of forest flowers. Serving that topmost of all lords were his personal assistants, attendants headed by Sunanda Nanda, his chakra and other weapons in their personified forms. Right, so they're in their personified forms. Like we see when, yeah. We'll see in, I think it's 12th? Yeah, 11th or 12th canto, I think. And we'll see that. Krishna is sitting there in Prabhas Shekhsha with the Shankarchakra Gaudapadma.
11th
canto. Huh? 11th canto.
Even during Pandrika's first time, we saw that he was with the personified.
In Pandrika's?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. His chakra and other weapons in their personified forms. His consort potencies, Pushti, Shri, Kiriti, and Aja, and all his various mystic powers. Lord Krishna offered homage to himself in this boundless form, and Arjuna, astonished at the sight of Lord Mahavishnu, bowed down as well. Then as the two of them stood before him, with joined palms, the almighty Mahavishnu, supreme master of all rulers of the universe, smiled and spoke to them with a voice full of solemn authority. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, "The Lord spread out everywhere by his effulgence, since he had uninterrupted powers, since he was the higher than the Garudaksha in Vishnu forms. Who were the highest amongst Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva." Okay, he was served by his extraordinary attendants, by his intrinsic weapons. Chakra, conch, club, sword, shield, arrows, bow, and noose with personal forms, having symbols of the weapons on top of their heads. He was served by his queens, such as Pushti. No, on top. I said on top of their heads, not on their foreheads. Like that. You mean, probably they have crowns and that, but in the crown you can see, you know, it has the particular. So you know who's who. He was served by his queens, such as Pushti, his Shaktis, which had personal forms. He was served by, because all these, he has all these Shaktis, all these, so all the different things that are there, like in the Yogpeet has all the things, but here you see they're in their personal forms. Because that's what's original. And then from that, then it'll come down into these other aspects. You know, it's just like one of, you know, his sword, right? So that you know, in the sword came as Nila, in the as from the Alwars. Right, you know, so like this, they can come like that, or you just see them with the Lord whenever he's there.
Okay. This considered to be the Vaikuntha planet?
Yes. Okay. He was served by all the Brahmas who attained liberation after the lifespans to 2 Paradhas. They were at his feet since he had given them liberation. Mm-hmm. So it says that Brahma goes back to God. So this is his place. Mm. You know. Krishna offered respects to Mahavishnu as part of his joyful pastimes. As he did to Govardhan. Vishnu was filled with unlimited powers. Krishna, as Swayam Bhagavan, never failed to show his pervading nature and other qualities, even in this situation. But he also never failed to act as a human in his pastimes. And so he's performing human pastimes. He does human stuff. But it doesn't mean that his other aspects of his all-pervading and all that, that's not going on. It's all being there. And though Arjuna was unconquerable, he showed fear on seeing this form. Thus the two offered respects. Both were playing their human pastimes. Krishna shows such powers to Brahma, and Akrura and others. But as in the Govardhan pastimes, he does so as a sport. Right? So one, he's showing all these this grandeur, you know, from the opulence and his position as the supreme. But then here, he's offering obeisance as the Mahavishnu, even though he's an expansion of expansion of expansion of expansion, like this. That just as he's offering obeisances to Govardhan, it's just it's fun, because it's in his human pastimes. He does so as a sport, as part of his human pastimes. Arjuna and others follow in this mood. Krishna also showed greatness when he assumed a huge form in the Govardhan pastimes. Mahavishnu showed his power, Bhuma, but he was also Krishna's helper and was lord of all the Brahmas. Thus he spoke with authority, right? Because all Brahmas are you know, empowered by him, and those who are devotees, then when at the end of their life, right, then they go to Mahavishnu, right? Thus he spoke with authority. He spoke with words which were bold so that Arjuna would respect his words under the will of Krishna, right? So, because he's a Kshatriya, he's said so many things, so now he's going to speak in that same powerful, you know, it's just Kshatriyas like this stuff. He smiled to indicate his pleasure. So he was speaking boldly, but he was smiling, you know, so it wasn't so solemn and like that. Lord Mahavishnu said, I brought the Brahmana sons here because I wanted to see the two of you, my expansions, who have descended to the earth to save the principles of religion. So even though Krishna is above, still, then as Nara Narayan, then they're expansions of Mahavishnu. Right? In other words, as Narayan, Krishna expands as, and so then he expands there, but it's Krishna who's doing that.
Yeah. It's like a play.
It's like a play. I wanted to see the two of you, my expansions, who have descended to the earth to save the principles of religion. As soon as you finish killing the demons who burden the earth, quickly come back here to me. Although all your desires are completely fulfilled, O best of exalted personalities, for the benefit of the people in general, you should continue to exemplify religious behavior as the sages Nara and Narayana. So even though as Krishna and Arjuna, they've finished their pastimes and they're satisfied there, then as Nara and Narayan, they should still perform their duties. Right? So, you know, at the same time, is then they must also be there. They would be there with him. You know, as the Brahmas are there, they're, you know, like that. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, Mahavishnu expressed through his words that the two were greater than himself. O two lords who have appeared with all your expansions and shaktis to protect the position of Brahmins and other aspects of Dharma, I brought the sons of the Brahmins to my abode, Bhuvi, because of the desire to see you too. Because otherwise he could just bring them. But because Krishna is actually superior, he can't. So he does something that will get him to come. So why would Krishna come? Why does he care? Because it's like that. But because Arjuna is, so then now Krishna will come.
Yes. It's like affection. It's like affection.
Yes, because of the affection, yes. Mahavishnu says to Krishna and Arjuna, by your mercy you establish Dharma. He proves this conclusion by giving an example. You are the best of all those who appear on earth, Rishabhau. Therefore you are full in your desires, Purna Kamau. You should enact Dharma to teach the people, to protect everyone. Stityai. Nara Narayan are your umsas. In that form you protect Dharma. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. Mahavishnu said, my dear Krishna and Arjuna, I was very eager to see you both, and therefore I arranged to take away the babies of the Brahmana and keep them here. I have been expecting to see you both at this palace. You have appeared in the material world as my incarnations in order to minimize the force of the demoniac persons who burden the world. So they expanded, and that way then they're... you know, that way their expansions of Mahavishnu, so Mahavishnu's work gets done, but Krishna is the one who is doing it.
Yes.
Right? Now, after killing all, you have appeared in this material world as my incarnations in order to minimize the force of the demoniac persons who burden the world. Now, after killing all these unwanted demons, you will please come back to me. The two of you are incarnations of the great sage Nara Narayana. although you are both complete in yourselves, to protect the devotees and to annihilate the demons, and especially to establish religious principles in the world, so that peace and tranquility may continue. You are teaching the basic principles of factual religion, so that the people of the world may follow you, and thereby be peaceful and prosperous. And so it's referred to as the great sage Narayan.
Yes.
But it's two. Right? Narayan is two persons, but they're one person. Like that. So you always see him as Narayan Rishi, not Rishis.
Yes.
Right? Like that. Yes.
So Maharaj, is there, it means it is 2% combined in one person?
No, it's one person manifesting as two. Or it's two persons. It goes both ways. It both works.
So there's two deities.
Yeah, there's two deities. Yes. There's two deities. But they're considered one.
Yes.
Just like Jagannath Baladeva are considered one deity.
Yes.
Not two deities, three deities.
Yes.
But
yes.
But three persons.
Yeah. Two persons, one deity. So Narayan are one sage, two people. It's all part of Krishna's. Because that's why he's always referring to them with the plural. Like that. Because in plural here it just means two. You know. So there would be another way to say it. So you'd have singular, you'd have dual, that's it. Singular, dual, and plural. So dual is two people, but you're referring to them together as one. So then they, you know, he'll talk to them in that method. So, footnote 19. In verse 61, Krishna and Arjuna are referred to as Krishnau, meaning the two Krishnas. Srila Jiva Goswami says that this indicates that they had similar qualities and performed human pastimes together.
So this is dual. This is dual, Krishna.
Yes, yes. Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus instructed by the Supreme Lord of the topmost planet, Krishna Arjuna assented by chanting Om, and then they bowed down to Almighty Lord Mahavishnu, taking the Brahmana's sons with them. They returned with great delight to Dwarka by the same path along which they had come. There they presented the Brahmana with his sons, who were in the same infant bodies in which they had been lost, right? Because otherwise it's been so long. Now it's a big, you know. So now it's like that. At the same time, you got to take care of 10 babies at once. Okay. Having seen the domain of Lord Vishnu, Arjuna was totally amazed. He concluded that whatever extraordinary power a person exhibits can only be a manifestation of Sri Krishna's mercy. Right? So any power anyone has is still just a manifestation of Krishna's mercy. It's not their own. No one can claim, right? Because before he claimed, So Brahma and Shiva aren't, you know, that's proven there, and they didn't, but Arjuna was saying, well, you know, it didn't work out either. So no one, it's all happening just because of Krishna's mercy. Yeah? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitya Gaura.